Okay, I didn't prepare a set of Marim Makomos. I wanted to just discuss a variety of issues relating to the Yantam of Sukkos, some more Lamaisa, some less Lamaisa, but interesting nonetheless, in my opinion. And all of them, I think, are things that we have not really discussed in the past. In past years, we gave a shiur, I think, on the mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah, on traveling on Sukkos, things of this nature. Today is going to be more of a potpourri of inyanei Sukkos. So let's start with the very beginning. Why is it that we sit in the sukkah? So the Gemara Masechta Sukkah and Daf Yud-Aleph and Beis tells us that there's a machlokas between Rav Elazar and Rav Akiva exactly why we sit in the sukkah. Rav Elazar says we sit in the sukkah to commemorate the Anane HaKavod, which surrounded us and protected us from the elements when we were in the Midbar. And in fact, the word in the Torah that the Torah says that you should sit in sukkos, ki basukkos ho shafti Es Bnei Yisrael implies that it was something that God did, something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us, and not something we had done on our own. So that seems to lend support to the idea that it was the Anane HaKavod. And we do find elsewhere in Tanakh that the word sukkah does refer to ananim, does refer to clouds. In Sefer Yeshayahu, also uses the term sukkah to describe clouds. So that's the sheet of Rabbi Lazar. The sheet of Rabbi Akiva, however, is that the reason we sit in sukkahs is not to remember the Anane HaKavod, but to remember actual sukkahs that we built for ourselves while we were traveling through the Midbar, that we needed to make these makeshift homes as we were traveling through the Midbar. So we made sukkahs for ourselves. Now each shita carries with it a problem. If it's to remember the Anane HaKavod, then the obvious kasha is that of all the miracles in the Midbar, we're going to make a holiday to celebrate one of those miracles. Why pick the Anane HaKavod? Why not the Nes of the Man or the Nes of the Be'er? Those were also very great miracles that accompanied us in the Midbar. Why would we dafka emphasize the Nes of the Anane HaKavod more than all the others? So a couple of suggested answers. Perhaps the reason why we don't celebrate the Nes of the Man or the Nes of the Be'er is there is a concept that Chazal have, Mandi Yahiv Chaye Yahiv Mizoni, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he gives us life, it's only natural that he's going to give us the means to sustain that life. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take us out into the Midbar and then leave us to die in the Midbar without any food and without any water, well then thank you very much, but no thanks. And what's the point? The whole point is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give life. Mandi Yav Chai, Yav Mizoni. It stands to reason he should give us the means to sustain ourselves. And therefore, it's not worthy of celebrating the Man and the Be'er because it's natural that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have done that for us. Anani HaKavod was beyond what was expected. All he needed to do was give, needed to do. All that would have been expected was for him to sustain us. Anani HaKavod was much more than basic sustenance. And perhaps for that reason, we celebrate the Anani HaKavod. Now what's the problem with Rabbi Akiva's Shita? That it's to remember the Sukkos Mamish. So the problem is, why would you make a holiday to remember Sukkos Mamish, to remember little huts that we made for ourselves? What exactly are we remembering? I don't remember if I do construction on my house, I don't have a mitzvah to remember that. Why do I have a mitzvah to remember little huts that I built for myself while traveling through the desert? What's the kunz? What's the idea of remembering that? So that seems to be a machlokas amongst Rishonim and Achronim. The Rashbam in Vayikra Perachav Gimel, and also the Bach write that it's bedavka to remember that at this time of year, when Sukkos is a time of Zman Simchaseinu, when we collect all of the produce from the field, and we feel good about ourselves, and we're experiencing a great deal of Simcha, and we have everything stored away, that we should remember that we were once in the desert, and we didn't have fields, and we didn't have produce, and hopefully through that we come to an appreciation of Kochi Vatsum Yad Yasul Yasachai Lazeh. So what we're remembering is that we once had to make Sukkos, not the great glory of Sukkos in the desert, but that we once had to make Sukkos and we had to rely on the Ribbono Shel completely for our sustenance. And hopefully that should remind us that just like back in those days, we had to rely completely on the Ribbono Shel Olam, so too nowadays, we also still rely completely on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Perhaps that's why the Pasuk says, Kol ha'ezrach v'Yisrael yeshu basukos, that all the Ezrach, Ezrach means citizens of Israel, means someone who's a gavra, someone who belongs, someone who has a sense of confidence, should sit in Sukkos. That's why the Torah Dafka uses that terminology, that you think you have such a great sense of confidence with all the simcha, with all this material success, you know what, sit in the sukkah and remind yourself where everything really comes from. That's why the Gemara at the very beginning of Avodah Zarah, the Gemara tells us, in the very beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'asu lavo is going to want to reward Klal Yisrael, and the Umos Olam are going to start to complain, and they're going to say, it's not fair that you want to reward Klal Yisrael and not us. You never gave us the Torah, and they're going to have complaints about it. So the Gemara says that Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba B'Trunyan Briyos. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't overbearing on his creations, and therefore he goes ahead and he gives them, he says, I have a mitzvah kala that I want you to try to fulfill. You want to prove that you would have been able to do the mitzvos? Okay, here's the here's what I'm going to give you. Mitzvah kala yeshli v'sukkah shema. I have a mitzvah kala, it's called sukkah. Give it a shot. L'chuva asu osa. Go and do it. So the Gemara says that he gave them the mitzvah of sukkah, didn't work out for them because then he took out the sun in its strongest form, and they were all upset, and they ran outside of the sukkahs, and they kicked them down. And they failed that test. The Gemara asks, but wait a second, a Jew isn't chayiv in sukkah when the sun is so strong either, when you're mitzta'er, when the sun is too strong to be able to be comfortable in the sukkah, a Jew would have been pater also. So the Gemara says, yeah, but a Jew wouldn't have kicked the sukkah on the way out. But why dafka test the Goyim with the mitzvah of sukkah? So perhaps it's also related to the same theme, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show them that the mitzvah of sukkah represents a bitachon in the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that basic sense of bitachon is something that they were lacking. Not just to pick a mitzvah that happens to be easy to do, but a mitzvah that represents something, that represents this idea of it's not all about me, it's not all about what I've accomplished. That's the opinion of the Rashbam and the Bach. The Taz, however, says that the Yom Tov of Sukkos, celebrating the Sukkos Mamish, is to commemorate not literally just the Sukkos Mamish, it's to commemorate Yetzias Mitzrayim in its entirety. But we sit in huts that are similar to the ones they sat in when leaving Mitzrayim in order to set the atmosphere, to set the mood. Obviously we're going to drink water. Obviously we'll eat food. We can't really duplicate the man, the bear, or anything else. So we try to duplicate the existence of living outside, being in the middle of nowhere. And that's why we celebrate the huts. It's not about the huts per se. It's about the entire experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. L'may naf kamina, what difference does it make whether whether we sit in Sukkos to commemorate the Anonei HaKavod, or whether we sit in Sukkos to commemorate Sukkos Mamish? So to answer that question, it's important to point out something else. Normally, when it comes to an issue like this, to a discussion like this, why do we sit in Sukkos? That's not something that you would find in a halachic sefer. Normally, the Gemara can have it, it's an agadic discussion, but in halacha, in terms of determining psak halacha, this has nothing to do with psak halacha. What difference does it make? But over here you find the Torah actually does take a stance on it. The Torah discusses this halacha. So the Bach is bothered. Why would the Torah discuss this? No nafkamina l'maisa. Why would the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch paskin in the machlokas that has no nafkamina l'maisa? Generally, how would you paskin? Generally, we would paskin like Rabbi Akiva against Rabbi Lazar. We have a rule that Rabbi Lazar shamutehu. And in fact, the Prima Gadim paskins like Rabbi Akiva for that reason. But the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah paskin like Rabbi Lazar over here. They paskin that it's to commemorate the Anan HaKavod. But generally speaking, again, the Bach has the kasha. Why paskin at all? After all, it's totally unrelated. Has no nafkamina halacha lemaisa. This is like when you have a discussion in the Gemara about what the halacha was about a certain instance that was a once in a lifetime instance, like when Moshe Rabbeinu put the big day kahuna on Aaron during the Shivas Yimei Amiluim. So the Gemara has a machlokas what the exact seder was. The Gemara Maseches Yuma Daf Hey has a machlokas what the order of putting on the begadim was. So the Gemara says, who cares? My dahava hava. I'm sure Moshe Rabbeinu knew what to do. I'm sure he had it all figured out, and it has no nafkamina for us. So why would the Torah paskin on something that clearly has no nafkamina? So the Bach wants to be mechadesh that it does have a nafkamina. And this is our first interesting halachic note to keep in mind going into Sukkos. The Bach says the nafkamina is that the pasuk says that you're supposed to sit in Sukkos lema'an yedu doro seichem, so that future generations can know, Kiba Sukkos Ushaftias B'nai Yisrael, that we sat in Sukkos when we were coming out of Mitzrayim. And says the Bach, what the Torah is telling us is that although we have a rule in Kalat Torah Kula, that mitzvos srichos kavana, and all that means, mitzvot is machlokas, mitzvot srichos kavana, mitzvot sein srichos kavana, we paskin that mitzvot srichos kavana, at least by a daraisa, that you need to have kavana l'shem mitzvah in order to be yotzei mitzvah. But that kavana that's necessary to be yotzei mitzvah is just kavana to do the service of God. When I pick up a lulav and esrog, all my kavana needs to be is that I want to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. I don't need to think about what lulav represents and how the dalad minim represent four kinds of Jews and four parts of the human body. And you know, I don't have to think any deep thoughts. All I have to think is I'm trying to do the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's as far as mitzvah sirus kavana requires a person to go. But says the Bach, when the Torah says the man yedu dorasechem, it's telling us we need a higher level kavana. It's not enough to say, okay, I'm sitting in sukkah, not just because it's a nice day outside, but because I want to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have to go beyond that. We have to say, no, really, why am I sitting in sukkah? And we have to think about what the reason for the mitzvah is. That's what the pasuk is telling us with the words "man yedu dorasechem." To think about and internalize what the reason for the mitzvah of sukkah is. And the Bach says perhaps that's why the Torah paskins, because you need to know what to think. Should you be thinking Anani HaKavod, or should you be thinking Sukkos Mamish? So the Bikur Yaakov goes so far as to say, Bikur Yaakov is one of the major svarim on Hilchos Sukkah. He goes so far as to say that if you don't have that kavana, perhaps you're not even mekayim the mitzvah. That this kavana is li'ikuva. If you sit in sukkah and you don't think about what sukkah represents, not just that you're doing the mitzvah, but what it represents, either Anani HaKavod or Sukkos Mamish, it's possible you don't even get the mitzvah. That idea is very interesting. Not necessarily Mishnah Berurah says, look, you do get the mitzvah, we don't paskin that way, but still the chachili should have that kavana. So one of the things I try to be makvid about on the first night of sukkah, when I remember, in my sukkah, is to always make a point to ask my children, why are we sitting in the sukkah? What are we trying to commemorate? And that's how we start the conversation, so that everyone's mind at least gets to that point. Now, which way should we paskin? So we might as well mention both. Once we're doing it, we might as well mention Sukkos Mamish and Anani HaKavod. It's a good source of discussion. You can start discussing and ask for ideas why it is that we would remember all the questions we discussed, why it is that we would remember Sukkos Mamish, why the Anani HaKavod as opposed to any of the other miracles, but at least that way it gets everyone's mind in that place where, according to the Bikur Yaakov, that's a kavana that's necessary even b'di'evit, and if we want to be yotzei the mitzvah. So that is in terms of why we sit in sukkah. Now, I've been getting a lot of questions the past few days, obviously since Yom Kippur, always between Yom Kippur and sukkah, there's a lot of requests for house calls. People are improvising, putting up different kinds of sukkos, and some people trying to get away a little cheaper without paying for the couple of $1,000 prefabbed sukkos. So they have a lot of shilas, you know, the walls and the schacht, and if there's airspace and schacht puzzle and trees. So it's always a busy time in terms of discussing the building of the sukkah. Now, the building of the sukkah, is that itself a mitzvah? Is there a mitzvah to actually go build the sukkah? So the pasuk says, Chaka sukkos ta'asalacha ba'asbacha migarnacha miyikvecha, that you should make for yourself chaka sukkos. Seems to be the Torah is telling us to make for yourself sukkos, that you should build sukkos. The Gemara, the Talmud Yerushalmi in Brachos says that you make a bracha when you build the sukkah. That before building the sukkah, a person should make a birchas ha-mitzvah on building the sukkah, apparently assuming that the building itself is a mitzvah. However, in Bavli, in Talmud Bavli, which we generally paskin like, the Rif writes at the end of Erevin that we paskin like the Talmud Bavli against the Talmud Yerushalmi, because the halacha in general with later generations of Amoraim is Hilchos HaKebasra'a, that we paskin like the later generation over the earlier generations. And the logic of Hilchos HaKebasra'a is that we assume that the later generation heard everything the earlier generation said, and therefore is building on that, is making a more educated psak based on what the earlier generation said. So the Rif says Talmud Bavli came after the Talmud Yerushalmi, and that's why we paskin like the Bavli. It's Hilchos HaKebasra. There are other theories out there as to why we pass on like the Bavli, and there's a major discussion whether the Rif is historically accurate, that the Chachmei Talmud Bavli actually really saw the Yerushalmi or don't know what it said in Yerushalmi. But either way, we pass on like the Bavli. The Bavli, Menachos Taf Mem Beis, says that you do not make a bracha on the construction of the sukkah. The question is, why not? If the Torah says build the sukkah, why shouldn't you make a bracha? It sounds like a mitzvah. Why no bracha on the construction of a sukkah? So there are three basic shitos in Achronim. The Avnei Nezer in Or Chaim Siman Tafnun Tesos Tes Zayin says that the building is a mitzvah, like the pasuk says, but you don't make a bracha because you only make a bracha on a gemar mitzvah, and the gemar mitzvah is only when you sit in it. The gemar mitzvah is not the building; it's the beginning of the mitzvah. But the gemar mitzvah is only when you sit in it. In general, if a mitzvah goes over an extended period of time, you wouldn't make a bracha at the first stage of the mitzvah, only when you're ready to complete the mitzvah. The Chassam Sofer in Yardea Sim Reishayin Aleph says that there's no mitzvah to build the sukkah according to the Bavli. That's only what the Yerushalmi says. But building a sukkah according to the Bavli is a hechsher mitzvah. And therefore, you don't need to build the sukkah yourself. You can have anyone else build it for you, and that's totally fine. It's not your mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah to go build the sukkah. So that's how he understands the Talmud Bavli, why we don't make a bracha. The third sheet is sort of a compromise view. The Netziv in Hamik She'ila, Mitzvah Kuf Samach Tes, I think we discussed this recently, discusses the concept of Hechsher Mitzvah Ksuva Bikra. He says, some sofers write that it's a Hechsher Mitzvah. It's only a preparation for the mitzvah, but it's a very high-level Hechsher Mitzvah. It's a Hechsher Mitzvah Ksuva Bikra. It's a Hechsher Mitzvah that the Torah actually speaks about. And when you have a Hechsher Mitzvah Ksuva Bikra, it takes on many of the rules of a mitzvah itself, such as mitzvah bo yosim v'shlucho. Better for you to do it yourself than to have someone else build it. And that's why many people are makbid, that even if they do have someone pretty much build their sukkahs for them, at least they put up a few pieces of schach, or they roll out a little bit of the schach so that they can have the mitzvah bo yosim v'shlucho. Someone asked me recently, what if a non-Jew builds your sukkah? Is a kosher if a non-Jew builds a sukkah? One of the rebbeim in yeshiva said to me that he spoke to his parents, and his mother said, yeah, I had they have a non-Jewish handyman who's always around the house, said, yeah, I had him put up the sukkah, because, I didn't want to trouble anybody else to do it, he was around anyway, so I had him build the sukkah. So this rebbe said to me, he said, what do I do now? The non-Jew built the sukkah, what do I do to adjust it? So I said, l'chora, there's no problem with that. The Gemara Masechta Sukkah says explicitly, sukkah's ganvach is kosher. Ganvach is a natrikin, it's a Rashi Tevis. And the nun, I think, is for Nachrin. Or maybe the gimel is for Gai. What is it? I don't remember. But whatever, one of them is a non-Jew. That a sukkah built by a non-Jew is absolutely kosher. There's nothing wrong with the sukkah's ganvach. I was surprised because the Rav Shechter once told the story when he was growing up, I guess after his family left Philadelphia, his father was a rabbi in Philadelphia for a while, but then they moved to the Bronx. His father was a rabbi in the Bronx. So he said that when they were in the Bronx, the conservative shul in the Bronx had changed rabbis. The older, more traditional conservative rabbi had either retired or left or whatever it was, and they had hired a younger, less traditional conservative rabbi. And the old chazan in the conservative shul really didn't like the new young rabbi. So the old chazan was always trying to come up with some way to chap the rabbi where he's doing something wrong. So he would go to the Orthodox rabbi in town to ask him, look, is this okay what the rabbi did? Is that okay? To try to come up with a way that the rabbi was doing everything wrong. So he said that the chazan came to his father, Rav Shechter said, the chazan came to his father, of Melch Shechter Zuchar Levracha, this chazan from the conservative shul, and he said, the rabbi allowed the guy to build the sukkah in the shul. So isn't that terrible? So Rav Melch Shechter said, wait a second, the sukkah in your shul is indoors anyway, isn't it? So he said, yeah, but forget that. Let's pretend it was outdoors. If it was outdoors, is it okay to have a... He said, what do you mean if it was outdoors? It's fossil anyway. You have a roof over the top of it. No. If it was outdoors. He says, if it was outdoors, it would be totally fine to have a guy build it. There's nothing wrong with a guy building the sukkah. I just bought a sefer this year. I think it just came out this year. 2 volumes on everything you ever wanted to know about sukkahs. It's called Sukkahs Chaim, I think is what it's called. And he has a whole 3 pages on whether a guy can build a sukkah for you. And I thought, what do you have 3 pages? The answer is in the Gemara. It's enough in the Gemara. That yes, you can have a guy build a sukkah. Apparently the Achronim aren't so convinced that that's always true. Meaning, some of the Achronim want to distinguish between a guy who's building the sukkah for the sake of building a sukkah for you, and a guy who just happens to build a hut that you then go into. Others distinguish between a guy who's building the Shem Tzel or not doing the Shem Tzel. But either way, it seems that everyone really does agree that if he builds it for the sake of building a sukkah, that it's not a problem. Which leads you to believe that it's, well, certainly it's kosher, but it leads you to believe that it's not a mitzvah to do it, that the Gemara wouldn't be so okay with it if it were a mitzvah to actually build the sukkah. That the Shita of the Talmud Bavli is that it in fact is not a mitzvah. The mitzvah is to sit in sukkah. It's a Hechsher mitzvah to build the sukkah. It's not even that you could say the guy is your shliach. There's no shlichus by a guy. So it's a hechsher mitzvah. What about children building the sukkah? So Shulchan Aruch paskins that the schach has to be put up l'shem tzel. has to be put up. Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tov Reish Lamed Hey says when you put the schach up, you have to be putting it up intending to cause shade, to give shade in the sukkah. So you have to have some kavanah in mind. That's what the idea of putting up the schach has to be. So the Avnei Nezer writes in the Tshuva in Tov Ayin Hey Os Beis that even a katan can put it up l'shem tzel, because generally speaking, even though anything that requires kavana, we assume a katan doesn't have the ability to have that level of kavana. That's kavana sa'osa, but over here, that's not the requirement. The requirement is not that you need kavana l'shma or anything like that. It's just a kavana for what's normally done, that the sukkah should be l'shem tzel. It's not called sukkah, even if the intention comes. It's just that if there's no intention for shade, it's not called a sukkah. And even if later you then intend to use it for shade, then it would be tasav lo menasoi. Over here, the intention of the owner is for tzel at the time that the child is putting it up. So it doesn't need that the child doesn't need to have the kavana. You have kavana that you're having the child do it, l'shem tzel. So it doesn't seem to be a real problem if a child builds the sukkah. It's interesting, good trivia question, and a good question to think about in general. What is the only halacha that the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, in back-to-back Se'ifim in Shulchan Aruch, and he gives two different reasons in the two Se'ifim in Shulchan Aruch. He repeats the same halacha, one Se'if after the next, and he gives two different reasons. I'm not going to give an answer, something to think about, but I'll tell you what it is. The halacha is, in the very last halacha in Hilchas Yom HaKippurim, and again, in the very first halacha in Hilchas Sukkos, in Hilchas Sukkah, the Rama writes that right after Yom Kippur, you're supposed to go and build the sukkah. That miyad, what's on Yom Kippur, you go out and you build the sukkah. The only thing is, in one situation he writes that because of mitzvah, abal yado aliyach mitzena, and in the other place, I think he says, because you're supposed to be holeich mi mitzvah le mitzvah. So why two different reasons? And why does he repeat the halacha twice? It must be that there are two elements of the din. That one, it's a din in Yom Kippur, and it's also a din in Sukkah, but something to think about. Just an interesting point that the Rama includes both halachas. Okay, so you build your Sukkah. What constitutes a kosher Sukkah? Obviously, the halachas are much more vast than we can cover in a short shir, but we'll just go through some of the basic halachas. Shulchan Aruch and Tafresh Lamed Sif Aleph says, any material can be used for the walls of the sukkah. Walls of the sukkah doesn't matter. The walls have to be at least 10 tefachim high, and the schach cannot be resting more than 20 amos above ground. So the walls can actually be higher than 20 amos, but the schach would then have to be below the top height of the walls. The schach can't be more than 20 amos above ground. What about canvas walls? Canvas sukkahs were very popular for a while. They're still somewhat popular. So Shulchan Aruch and Tafresh Lamed Sif Yud Paskins that if the walls are shaken by a common breeze, that if the walls would move by a common breeze, then such walls are not kosher. So that's why a lot of poskim recommend that if you have a canvas sukkah, you see now they actually sell it with the canvas sukkahs. They have straps that go around the canvas sukkah that either, depending on how you look at it, holds the canvas in place where the breeze won't knock it too far in one direction or the other. Or the halacha is that whenever you have solid material within three tefachim of each other, there's a halacha called lavud, halacha l'moshe misinai, that anything that has less than a three tefach airspace between each other, it says if that space is filled in. So the strings themselves might actually constitute a wall as long as the strings extend up within three tefachim of each other. They're laid across vertically, but within horizontally, they're within three tefachim of each other. But and they ultimately reach a height of 10 tefachim. Then perhaps those straps themselves can serve as the walls using lavud. Now the Mishnah Berurah writes that lechatchila it's better not to rely on fancy lavuds on the use of halacha l'moshe misinai to make your walls a kosher wall. He says better not to do that. Better to just use solid walls unless you can have four walls to the sukkah. He says if you can do less than four walls, then make sure they're all full, complete, solid walls. Don't rely on any shtick. Now, most of the time when we make a sukkah, we typically do make it with four walls anyway. Technically speaking, the walls only need two walls of seven tefachim and a third wall of a single tefach, but it's a very complicated discussion of exactly how that works, where that tefach has to go, and how to set it up in such a way that it's kosher. And because we're not sufficiently familiar with all those halachic requirements, so Shulchan Aruch says we should always have three walls, right? We should and not do anything less than that unless you're completely familiar with all the halachic details. Furthermore, There is another halacha by sukkahs. That's called teshuv kein taduru. That you're supposed to live in sukkah the same way you live in your house, and therefore the sukkah needs to be not quite as comfortable as the house, because there is this sense of diras arai, but it should be something that's a livable arrangement that you could theoretically live in. If you have two walls and a tefach, so most people would not be very comfortable living in something like that. So it could be that that's a little bit of a chisaron in teshuv kein taduru. And the truth is, it's probably not a genuine chisaron in teshuv kein taduru, meaning a passeling chisaron in teshuv kein taduru, because the Gemara Masech HaSukkah discusses a chasun and kala when they first get married. Do they have to celebrate the Sheva Brachos in the Sukkah? So the Gemara says, why don't they celebrate together in the Sukkah? They would stay in the same place. Typically speaking, the way it would work is that they would celebrate all the Sheva Brachos in one room. It's not like nowadays. You get married in a fancy hall somewhere, and then you have Sheva Brachos by this friend and by that restaurant, and you go different places. It used to be that the chasun's father would build a little house, and that's where they would do the chasna, and that's where they would have all the Sheva Brachos, and that's where the chasun and kala lived for the entire week. So the Gemara Masechta Sukkah on Chaf Ayin Beis asks, why don't you do the Sheva Brachos in the Sukkah? So you could make that place the Sukkah. So the Gemara gives two reasons why you can't do it. Number one, the Gemara says because of Yichud. Sukkahs were typically made on rooftops. And the problem was, what if the chassan needed to go to the bathroom or needed to leave the Sukkah for a while? So he'd go down, and very often one of his friends would be left in the Sukkah with the wife all alone. And since it's on a rooftop, it's not a place that's well traversed. People aren't going there all the time. So it might be a problem of Yichud with the chassan's friend and the kala. It's a good kash on the Gemara. How could it be Yichud if Baila Be'ir, her husband, is still in the city? It's a kash on the Gemara for a different time. But the other answer the Gemara gives is that not Yichud, Mishum Tsar Chassan, that it's going to cause the chassan tsar. And Rashi explains what's the tsar chassan, is that a sukkah was typically made with three walls, and the lack of privacy is going to be distressing to the chassan. So what you see is that it's not a real chisaron teshuv kein taduru, because the Gemara understood that even though for a chassan it might cause tsar, but there is an understood lack of privacy in the sukkah, and that's still okay, it's still a fulfillment of teshuv kein taduru. Where teshuv kein taduru really plays a role is what we discussed once in the past when you're traveling on sukkahs, when you go somewhere on a trip. Let's say you take your family on a trip to an amusement park or something, and you want to find the one place that's not going to be overrun by all of Brooklyn and the five towns. So you go further out of the island. You drive out 2 miles out to, I don't know, not 2 miles, 2 hours out to somewhere far out on the island where Jews haven't found yet. And there's no sukkah there. So what do you do? What do you do for lunch? Can you eat lunch outside of the sukkah? So Pashup Pshat, Teshuv kein taduru says you treat your sukkah the same way you treat your house. So when you're traveling on during the year, if you take your kids to an amusement park during the year, you don't say, oh boy, we better be home for lunch, otherwise what are we going to do? No, you bring food along and you eat it in the park, and that's what you do. So you don't have to treat your sukkah any better than you treat your house. And you can say the same thing about sukkah. That's the Pashup Pshat. That's not necessarily the Minhag HaOlam, though. So Rav Moshe, the reason why perhaps in America it's not the Minhag HaOlam, Rav Moshe was asked about this, about taking trips, stam, for pleasure, for enjoyment, and Rav Moshe said, absolutely not. We don't say teshuv kein taduru. He says, I'll prove it to you. Because let's say you have a person who just enjoys the outdoors. And sometimes, instead of sleeping in his bedroom in his million-dollar home in the five towns, he goes out to his backyard and he enjoys sleeping in the backyard because he likes fresh air every once in a while. So if you have a person that enjoys doing that, do you think for a moment that if he has a sukkah, he's allowed to say, you know what, I'm not going to sleep in the sukkah tonight. I'm going to sleep right outside my sukkah. I like fresh air. It's what I do to my house. Sometimes I have my house right there, I sleep right outside my house. So why shouldn't I be allowed to sleep right outside my sukkah? So Rav Moshe says, that's ridiculous. Of course not. You can't. The sukkah's right there. You can't sleep right outside the sukkah. He says, what it leads you to believe is that teshuv kein taduru does not tell you that you have the right to say, for my own enjoyment, I'm going to miss out on an opportunity to do the mitzvah of sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah Daf Chavav says that holchei drachim are pater from sukkah, and holchei l'dvar mitzvah are even more pater. We're not going to leave out the details of the sugya, but even people who are traveling stam are pater from sukkah. So when the Gemara says that, Rav Moshe points out that Rashi writes, what does it mean holchei drachim? You're going l'schora, for business. So Rav Moshe says the point is you have some compelling reason that you need to go. When you're traveling outside of your home because you have a compelling reason that you need to be there, like for business, then you're patur from sukkah on your travel. So if you're taking a business trip and you're on a flight to Washington or California or Philadelphia, something like that, and you want to eat lunch on the plane, yeah, then you're holchei drachim. Then we would say teishu kein tadur. You wouldn't wait till you got back home to eat lunch. If it wasn't sukkah's time, you don't have to wait till you get back home to eat lunch when it is sukkah's time. But stam a spatzir, just an enjoyable trip, Rav Moshe says that he would not think that that's okay. Rav Yashiv in his sefer on Masechta Sukkah disagrees. Rav Yashu says, Rav Moshe is saying a chiddush gadol. Normally we assume teishu kein tadur means teishu kein tadur. It means that you treat it exactly the same way as you treat your house. He did not find Rav Moshe's discussion compelling. Rav Moshe has one more reason to be machmir. Rav Moshe says there is a gemara Masechta Menachos that tells us that if a person, let's say, decides, you know, there is a mitzvah to wear tzitzis, but the mitzvah to wear tzitzis is only if you're wearing a beged that has dalit kanfos on it. So let's say a person decides, I buy my shirts and my suits in a normal store and nothing comes with dalet kanfos on it. Until you go to the farm store, you don't see anything with dalet. So what do I have to buy a bag? What do I have to trouble myself? Buy a bag with dalet kanfos just to put tzitzis on it? What's the point? I'm never going to have the chiyuv. So the Gemara says that, well, technically there's no iser in doing that, Be'idan Ritcha, at times HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry anyway, he's going to pay you back for it. It's like I described to my Talmidim today when I was discussing this concept. I said to them, you know, when you do something, when you don't do something right, you just don't do something, not that you do something wrong, you just don't do something you could have done right. So your parents aren't always going to get angry at you, they won't say anything to you, because after all, you didn't do anything wrong, per se. But then, when you do something right, and your mother starts yelling at you for, when you do something wrong, rather, and your mother starts yelling at you for what you did wrong, then it's all going to come out. She's going to say, and not only did you do this, but you had an opportunity to do something nice for me that time, and you didn't do it, blah, blah, blah. And now everything's going to come out. All the, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyachul, Lahavdil, it's the same way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, look, if I'm not angry, fine. So you choose not to do tzitzis, it's fine. It's okay, I'm not going to go crazy about it. But Be'idan Ritcha, when I'm getting angry at you for other things, this is going right on that list of things to be angry about when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is otherwise going to be angry. So says Rav Moshe, person decides to go for his own enjoyment away from a sukkah and eat meals outside of a sukkah, and that's at least Be'idan Ritcha, at least when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at us, he's going to get angry for that too. So that's how Rav Moshe wants to tighten that. Rav Yashiv says, no, you can't compare the two cases. A guy who doesn't buy a beggar that has dalet kanfos avoids the mitzvah of tzitzis entirely. A guy who goes on a day trip sat in sukkah for the first 3 days of Yantif. He sat in sukkah for breakfast that morning. He's sitting in sukkah for dinner that night. For lunch, he misses out on the mitzvah of sukkah. Why? Because he's treating his sukkah exactly like he treats his house. And that's all the mitzvah is. So he is doing the mitzvah. It's not like in tzitzis where if you don't buy the beggar of dalet kanfos, you can't say, oh, I'm doing the mitzvah. No, you're avoiding the mitzvah. You're not doing it at all. But on sukkahs, you're not avoiding the mitzvah. You're doing the mitzvah. You're treating the sukkah the same way you treat your house. So that's a major machlokas between Rav Yashiv and Rav Moshe. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has an interesting article on this topic on the Gush website where he said he was asked by, I guess it was a B'nai Akiva group that wanted to run a trip on sukkahs for the children, and they wanted to take them to a big deal somewhere where they didn't have a sukkah. And they wanted to know, you know, teishu kein tadur, we're going on a trip, and if we go on a trip during the year, we don't go back home to eat, we eat out and we make campfires and whatever else, and we don't worry about where we're eating. So shouldn't we say the same thing on sukkahs? So Rav Aaron was, although halachically it sounded like there's room to agree with Rav Yashiv over here, that technically it might be mutter, Rav Aaron had sort of his own be'idan ritcha kind of idea. He said, you know, he said, I was a rabbi in I was a rashiv in America for many years, and when I was in America, there were lots of people that work in Manhattan, lots of balabatim, they work on the high floor of an office building, and they would never have a havamina to take out their pastrami sandwich and eat it in the office and not go to a sukkah to find a sukkah. Is there a greater argument for teishu kein tadur than that? During the year, they wouldn't have to go home to eat lunch, so there's a very strong reason to assume that meikar adin, it's mutter. But there's just a Jewish intuition that you know that it's sukkahs. And they eat in sukkah. Now, some of that intuition may... So Rav Aaron said, so you're a Jewish group educating young Jewish children. You're daf going to take them on sukkahs to a place that doesn't have a sukkah? It's mashugah, you can't do something like that. That was Rav Aaron's approach. It happens to be, it could be that the reason we emphasize eating in sukkah so much might be... It's probably incorrect that we... We emphasize eating in Sukkah because we know that's when we make a bracha. We make a bracha when we eat in Sukkah. But that, the emphasis we really put on the wrong syllable a little bit over here. The mitzvah of Sukkah is not to eat in the Sukkah. The mitzvah of Sukkah is to live in the Sukkah. It means when you come home from shul in the morning, you go to your Sukkah. You don't go to your house. It means that when you're hanging out in your house and after getting home from work, you're not in your house. You're in your Sukkah. Everything is just, the Sukkah is the home base. You may need to go get something once in a while or more than once in a while from your house, but Sukkah is really the home base. That's the mitzvah. Perhaps because of that birchas ha-mitzvah, we put a little too much emphasis on the eating and a little too little emphasis on everything else that we're supposed to do in the Sukkah. But I was a little far afield over here. Somehow I was discussing the walls of the Sukkah and I got to that. I don't know how that happened. But let's go back to discussing the actual structure of the Sukkah. The halacha is a lot of times with these, with the canvas sukkahs in particular, you can put up, a lot of people put up their frames and then later on put the canvas. So sometimes they'll put up the frames and they'll want to roll out the schach, and then later they'll just throw the canvas up. So the halacha is that that's not kosher. You can't put the schach before you have the walls. The walls need to come before the schach. The schach is supposed to be the finishing touch on the sukkah. If it's not kosher when you put the schach on, then it's not okay. Let's say you have something covering over the schach. So when you put the schach on, it's not a kosher sukkah. And then you pull off the thing that was covering the schach. It could be that that's a problem. That's ta'aseh v'lo mina asui. That you're supposed to make the sukkah, not have it made by removing something else that's then going to make it okay. The Rav Shechter said he was once in Eretz Yisrael on Sukkot, and there was a terrible storm, like on Erev Yontif. And what happened was, in the hotels where they built sukkahs on different porches, so schach would blow off of one porch, and there were several people that had schach from a higher floor land on their sukkah, that it just ended up on their sukkah. So they wanted to know, is that kosher? It's the hotel schach anyway. The hotel will figure out how to pull the schach out of the swimming pool downstairs from my sukkah and get it back up to that guy's sukkah. But right now I have schach on my sukkah that came from the top floor. So Pashto says, that's not kosher because it's tasav lo manasi. It has to be done. You have to do it. You have to. So you pick it up and you put it back down and then it's kosher. But it's not kosher if it happens by itself. Now, in terms of what makes for kashrus schach? So we know what makes for kashrus schach. Basically, things that grow from the ground that are not mekabel tuma. What if you have schach pasul? You have things up there that are schach pasul. Let's say an overhang from the house or something of that nature. So the halach is four tefachim of schach pasul in the middle of the sukkah invalidates the sukkah. What that means that it invalidates the sukkah is if your sukkah had only three walls and there's four tefachim of schach pasul runs across the middle, so it's as if it split the sukkah into two sukkahs, and each one now only has two walls. But if your sukkah has four walls, and you have four tefachim of schach pasul running across the middle of it, it's split into two, and you view each side of the schach pasul as a separate sukkah, but guess what? That's fine, because each side has three walls, usually, if it's in the middle. But schach pasul of four tefachim generally would invalidate the sukkah. Less than four tefachim of schach pasul is not a problem, and according to many poskim, you're even allowed to sit underneath, directly underneath, schach pasul, if it's less than four tefachim wide of schach pasul. That's if the schach pasul is in the middle of the sukkah. What a lot of people have, though, is they put their sukkah right up against the house and there's an overhang from the house covering the side of the sukkah. So they want to know, can the wall of the house count as one of the walls of the sukkah if there's an overhang from the house covering, so there's a separation from the wall of the house to where you're actually under the schach. So the halacha is min atzad, you can have up until four amos of schach pasul, which is significant. That's 6 to 8 feet. That's a significant amount of schach pasul. When it's on the side of the sukkah, you can have up until four amos. That's schach pasul. When there's airspace, though, airspace is different. This is a situation where it's better to have something bad than to have nothing at all. When you have schach pasul, we give you up until four tefachim. Avir is different. Avir of three tefachim will invalidate the entire sukkah. Three tefachim is about 10 inches. And that would invalidate the entire sukkah if you have an airspace that's three tefachim wide running across the entire sukkah. If the airspace is less than three tefachim, the sukkah is kosher, but the Shulchan Aruch writes in Tafresh Lamed Beis that you're not supposed to sit underneath it. That airspace, even less than three tefachim, you're not supposed to sit underneath it. So that's when the old bamboo sticks that people used to use, you rarely see them anymore, but people used to use to make schach, so when they were just running across the sukkah, sometimes you'll have airspace that runs across the entire sukkah between the bamboo sticks, With the mats, you don't have it because there's so much weaving and everything that you're never going to have airspace that runs across any more than an inch or two, right? There's only, and that's certainly no problem, right? But if you have airspace running from end to end of the sukkah, so it could be that that's a shaila, whether you're in fact allowed to sit underneath underneath that area of airspace. The mats now has become very widely accepted, but it wasn't always. People for a while, and still not in Eretz Yisrael and amongst several poskim, they weren't so happy with the mats for several reasons. Number one, there were those that thought that the mats are mekabel tumah. If the mats are made for the purpose of schach, so then it's not mekabel tumah. But sometimes these mats that come from China or wherever might be made for the purpose of lying on it or decorating your wall or something. They have some other purpose and they might have a din of a kli. So it may not be, if that's the case, then it would be mekabel tumah and it would be a problem. I think most of the mats that we buy were made for the purpose of schach. I don't think that the mats that we have in our sukkah depot or sukkah whatever, sukkah city, I don't know, whatever the stores are called, I think they're all made for schach. So that wouldn't be the problem. The other problem is that it's a gezeiras tikra. Shulchan Aruch in Tafresh Chavtes says that you're not allowed to use boards, even if it's wood, flat wooden boards, that are more than four tefachim wide. Because most people would use such boards to roof their house. And the sukkah schach is not supposed to be like the roof of your house. That's what we call the gezeiras tikra. We're afraid that you can get confused and you can end up sitting in your house on sukkahs. Rabbi Tendler sits in his house on sukkahs. Rabbi Tendler has a retractable roof in his one of his rooms, and then the dining room, living room, den, whatever it is, retractable roof that he then puts schach on, but that he puts normal kosher schach on it, so it's not a problem because there's tikra. He said he built that room for Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe used to come visit all the time in sukkahs, and when Rav Moshe was living in Russia, he couldn't sleep in the sukkah because you'd die of frostbite. When he was living in the Lower East Side, which was the rest of his life, you couldn't sleep in the sukkah because you'd get mugged and killed. So when he would go to Muncie for Yantif, he would be so eager and be so excited to be able to sleep in the sukkah. So Rabbi Tendler said that, but he was in his 80s. They didn't want him out there in the sukkah. He wasn't in the greatest of health to be able to go out into the sukkah. So they decided to build this room to enable him to sit in the sukkah. But typically speaking, if you have a schach that looks like a roof, that's a problem. So that's some of the poskim thought. Rabbi Yashiv thought mats are possible for that reason, because mats measure more than four tefachim wide. They don't actually look like a roof, but the way Chazal made the gezeira stikra, is any schach that's more than four tefachim wide. And since, as a piece, it's more than four tefachim wide, so Rabbi Yashiv thought it fits into that general gezeira. Rav Shlomo Zalman disagreed. Many other poskim obviously disagree. They say, no, these mats aren't nearly sturdy enough. It doesn't resemble the tikra in any way, shape, or form. In sukkah, we have a general halacha we should be aware of. Mitztayer patur min ha-sukkah, that if a person is if it's freezing cold and very buggy and it's going to cause great tsar to be in the sukkah. So mitztayer is patur from sukkah. It's a very unique din in Hilchos Sukkah. So let's close with a story. Someone mentioned recently, I heard from Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, that he said that he knew a guy who went to visit Rav Chaim Eiser in Vilna, back in the day, obviously. And this fellow, who was a Rebbe in Torah Semes in Brooklyn later in his life, when he was a young bachur, he went to visit Rav Chaim Eiser on Sukkis, and he walked into Rav Chaim Eiser's house all the way up the stairs, and Rav Chaim Eiser said, I want to give you a cookie, something to drink, give him a duachnas sarchim. But at Sukkis, I'm very frail, I'm old, and it's very difficult for me to go down to the sukkah. Here, take it to the sukkah, eat, and then come back and we'll shmooze. So the guy went down to the sukkah, the bachur goes down to the sukkah to eat, and he's eating there, and all of a sudden he hears, Rav Chaim Eiser shuffling down with his cane, and what's going on? He just said that he's too frail, that he can't come. And Rav Chaim Eiser shows up in the sukkah, and he says, Rebbe, what are you doing here? I thought you said that you're too old, that you can't handle it. He said, a mitztayer is pata from sukkah, but a mitztayer is not pata from achnasas orchim. I have no reach here. Just because I'm mitztayer, it doesn't make me patur from achnas sarchim. So important yisod to remember. Mitztayer is a unique din in Hilchos Sukkah. But all the other mitzvahs of the Torah, even if it causes us some tzar, to be able to fulfill them, we're still mechuyav in all the mitzvahs of the Torah. Okay, sorry, I was a little all over the place, but a few in Yanei Sukkah. There's a lot more out there to learn. Okay.